Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Movie Geeks United Slam Dance Film Festival Spotlight on Snow and Ashes. Snow and Ashes tells the story of a war correspondent who covers an armed conflict in Eastern Europe. When he wakes from a temporary coma in his hometown, he discovers that his fellow collaborator has not come back. He then sets out to recapture the events that led to his friend's disappearance and his own narrow escape from the war zone. The film screens on Sunday, January 24th, and Wednesday, January 27th. Chatting with us about Snow and Ashes are the film's writer-director, Charles Olivier McCaud, actor David Alexandre Coiteau, and producer Eric Mantian. Tell me about the feeling there at the festival. Is there a sense of community among the filmmakers there?
Absolutely.
That's unique?
Yeah. From the first day I arrived there, and all of us, we felt the energy among all the filmmakers. People are so nice. It's that small town, you know, mentality. And from the first day, they made us feel really good here at Slam Dance. I don't know about Charles.
Yeah, it's just a great energy. It's very fun, very community. It's all friends, all family. And just we're having fun and, encouraging each other for our movies. So we hope that as much fun as possible and continue what we are here now.
Was there a particular reason why you went after Slam Dance? Does that festival have a personality that somehow fits this film you're bringing there?
Yeah, it's a true festival for indie filmmakers, and we have our film, which is, totally independent. We're a bunch of guys who have no history in filmmaking. We all made our first feature together. Eric is a producer, David is an actor, and I as a writer-director, and it was... Slam Dance was a great place to showcase our film and to premiere the film. So it was very exciting. It was a festival that we wanted to be in. And from the beginning, like, we were even in production, and David and I and Eric were talking, like, it would be great to be premiering at Slam Dance. So for us, it's a great achievement.
Tell me about the genesis of this project. What inspired you to sit down and write it?
Yes. Well, I'm the writer-director, and the idea started about 5 years ago when I met some war journalists, war photographers, and I was in Burma, in Southeast Asia, and I really became passionate about that reckless and courageous job. So I put that idea in my little moleskin notebook, and then Five years later, I decided that I wanted to write this story, and I wrote the script really quickly, and I was always passionate about journalism, especially war correspondence. And to me, what the idea came was a one-line thing where I said, what if two journalists go to conflict and only one of them comes back? So that was really the starting point. And I started writing with the ending, and then I went backwards, and a year later, here we go, and we have a completed film, so we're really happy.
I'm fascinated by war journalists and war photographers as well. I think we did a segment last year on Eddie Adams, who's one of the legendary war photographers. Tell me about the personality of a war photographer. I mean, they're obviously artists in their way, but they have to walk a really high tightrope.
They don't do it for the money. They don't do it for the fame. It's extremely dangerous. For example, we had a guy who supported us. He's a very big time war journalist, and he was telling us that, for example, most of the people that he worked with that covered Chechnya or like 10 years ago are most of them dead today, or invalidated, or very, very, very wounded. So they don't do it for the money. They don't do it they do it for a thrill. I think they're on search of something that's missing, like an adrenaline rush. And for me, I mean, they are witnesses of war and like firsthand, and it's really a great, I think it's a very passionate profession, which I wanted to do. My mother said, well, there's no way. So I said, well, I'll make movies. This way I can, you know, I can be anything. You know, I can be a spy or war journalist. So it's to me, that was the best road. And I was very fascinated by these guys, and their recklessness is crazy. And they are witnesses of things that, you know, it's unspeakable. And
yeah.
In terms of war journalism, it's changed with Iraq. It's changed so much since 9/11, where they go to these conflicts, and they are, if they follow like the army and all that, they are taken at, like, it's almost a control of the media. And you have these renegade journalists that go, you know, behind enemy lines, and they get close to these local people, these refugees, these families. They risk their lives just to report the news, just to be at that moment that can get that shot that will bring them fame, that will also bring exposure to the conflict, and will also, you know, kind of have an impact on the rest of the world. And this is what the job is, and I think it's really fascinating. It's really crazy. I love it.
Yeah, and it's such a responsibility because they're the eyes of the world in these regions.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, we talk a lot about the post-traumatic effects of soldiers, when they go to the conflict, but they never talk. We never hear about what happens to these guys, these journalists that go there. And they see they live the same event, and sometimes they see even worse stuff, you know, than some of the soldiers. And I thought a film shows a bit of that.
And it's not only war journalists. We're talking about also all journalists, just like the two that were in prison in North Korea this summer. And thank God that Bill Clinton came in and saved the day.
So there's this thing, as you say, you know, they have a huge responsibility, but at the same time, is the question is, these guys, a lot of them don't seem to have responsibility or face consequences for themselves, because they risk their lives for something that in the end is crazy. And I was talking to these journalists, and the war journalists were telling me that they were covering Bosnia, and then, you know, during the time that digital cameras were not available. So they have film cameras, a lot of their pictures, like agencies would tell them, some people were dying on their pictures. People would tell them, yeah, well, your picture's out of focus. Your picture is, you know, it's too dark, or use a better flash. I mean, it's so crazy, because they are there risking their lives, and you get someone in New York City in a nice building telling them that their photo is out of focus when they almost died taking it. So there's this really perverse side to this job, which I think is really exciting, really fun.
When I did some research for the character, I did talk to a journalist that went to cover some conflicts, and she took pictures of this massacre, and she never felt any emotion as she was taking those pictures. But when she saw them a couple of weeks later, she started to cry, and she gave up journalism altogether. But she didn't feel any emotion as she was taking the pictures, but she felt it when she was looking at the print a couple of weeks later.
I would think you would have to put that on your emotions aside or on hold when you're actually doing it in order to do the job successfully.
Yes. Have you seen? Are you aware? You know James Notchway?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a great. There was a great documentary on him a few years ago called War Photographer. And it was nice because he plugged a little camera on his camera, so there's no like documentary crew following him around, and we could really see where he was going, and I thought it was great just to experience that with him. And for us, it was the goal to make that experience as present and as, you know, as valuable in the film, that we are there with these guys risking their lives to report the news. And I thought it was, and in a lot of times in films they are reckless, and they have, at some point they will have to face some consequences about their, you know, their acts and what they do. So
So David, you're in the film. You're also a producer on this film.
That's right.
And you're a producer as well, Eric, on this film.
Yes.
So tell me about the process of putting this movie together. Obviously, you have a very visceral and provocative subject. Was it a difficult journey to get this off the ground?
Well, it started with Charles and myself met in Los Angeles 2.5 years ago during the AFM, and he had a script and I had a script, and we're doing both our projects, and my project fell apart basically, and I called him last October. I said, "Hey, what's going on with you? Any scripts you got?" And he sent me this script called Snow and Ashes. I read it, I loved it, and I called my friend Eric, and we invested in the film, and we decided to produce it. That's how I started it.
And Charles, when you're directing this film from your own script, but this is your first feature.
Yes.
What's the biggest learning curve for you, and how did you surprise yourself in the role of director?
Yeah, well, I think a director is a troubleshooter and a compromiser.
Whatever.
I think we have to make compromises every day on the script, on the performances, on the locations, on the art, on the costumes that didn't arrive on time, on the, you know, just compromises all day. And it was a great learning experience. It was so fun. And for me, I wanted to make this film as much as possible on the performances and to get the best for me. I wanted humanity in this film. I wanted human. I wanted truth in these guys. And for me, that was the greatest learning experience, was to work on a very instinctive, spontaneous way with all the actors. And they really responded to the material in a way that I gave them directions and they made me fly after that. And for me, it was really great, beautiful to approach this film. And for example, in the cinematography of the film, we have a very visceral cinematography and it's all handheld. We had no dolly. We had no like cranes or anything like that. And I told the actors, I said, "Don't worry about us. We'll follow you." And we did a lot of blocking and everything, but the actors really, really flew very free in the places with the characters and everything. And it was a really great learning experience to see these actors and these people take the material that I had written and bring it to life. And for me, I'm a little bit of a control freak, and all the actors have to be. But at some point, it's nice to let go and to see these actors taking off with your material. It's beautiful. So for me, it was a very great learning experience for that. And try to put as much as possible in the day, and hopefully that we get everything by the end of the day. So it was a, you know, true indie movie where we had to be creative in every way, whether it was in the rewrite, whether it's Eric with the crew, David as an actor. I mean, we always had to be creative. And I think that's what indie movie is. Independent filmmaking is making compromises and being creative about everything you do. Because if I was tied to the material and I said, okay, this is it and that's all I want and screw everything else, then the film would not have been what it is now and probably would not have been at all. So we were very, very flexible, very creative in the artistic production side in every ways. And it was really great to work with a great team that shared the vision. And I always say that it was nice to have a team that believe in the film, and all departments were working toward that vision that I had, that I shared with these actors, and that they also had. So it became really a unit that we were, and it was really nice. So it was a great process.
How long was the shooting schedule on this one?
28 days. We had 26 days of principal photography and 2 days of second unit.
So when you're working at a frantic pace like that, David, especially when you're performing in a film, an indie film like this where it's frantically paced, how does that translate for you as an actor? Does it help you at all as an actor, that pace?
I didn't have any problem with it. I'll tell you what. As soon as I was wearing that bulletproof vest, I just felt the character, and I was just ready to go. And boy, we had a hard shoot because we were in the snow most of the time. It was cold. Reese, which was also, he had more days than me, but he was stuck in the snow for hours and hours, his face. But we never complained. We never complained.
And so from Reese's perspective, he's not here. the lead actor is at the film, and that was in the script. The film was entirely told from his point of view. So that means that he is in every single scene in the film. So it was a very demanding for him. And I told him that from the very first time that we spoke, because I said, listen, actors usually wait a lot, you know, on set. They're on their chairs and they're just waiting for their close-ups. Reese was on camera like every single scene, every hour, every day of the shoot. So it was very intense, and he loved it, and he came all the way with it. Mm-hmm. And so did David. David had the second most time on the shoot, and it was very intense. It's a very physical film. It's a very physical script, and it's a very physical end product in the end, and it shows, and they loved it. So,
and what was fun is that Chuck gave us the freedom. I mean, he was telling me, look, you learn the lines, and then you forget them, and which helped us tremendously, because once we were on the set, we would sometimes improvise. And by the way, to go back to the question where it sounds funny, but as soon as I was putting on the costume, and especially the bulletproof vest, it made a whole difference for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of armor informs the character, I would think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Eric, are you guys all from Canada?
Yeah, well, actually, I was born in California, but I was raised in Montreal.
Okay. I know you shot this in Canada.
Yeah.
What is the independent film community like in Canada? Is it a community that you can feel?
It is, actually. Well, Quebec, being from Quebec, we have our own star system, if I can use the term. And most of the biggest projects that come out of Canada come out from Quebec, mostly in the French language.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are also financed by the private public sector, which wasn't our case because we were, you know, we're totally unknown kids with really off-the-wall projects. So we decided that if we want to be known in this market, we got to do it on ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's why we shot it in English also, because we needed, since we're investing our own money, we needed to have the widest audience, and we wanted to show it to the widest audience possible.
Right.
And that's what we ended up doing.
And Charles, what do you hope that this festival experience will do for the film? What do you hope to get out of it?
Yeah, well, I hope the film gets as much exposure as possible. I mean, we're here to make as much noise as possible and to tell everybody about our film. We want the film to be seen, to be heard, I think we have a very high-quality project. We did it with very limited resources. We're very proud. We are, you know, we're, as I said before, it's all new to us. And when we first made the film, it was like kids going to school for the first day. And it was just a great experience, and I want this experience to continue here. It's our first festival with the film, it's a world premiere. We're very excited. We got full house already tomorrow. It's a lot of people are talking about the film, so it's really, we want to get as much exposure as possible and to share our experience, to share the story of the film, to share our story, because we have a lot of stories, and it's just a lot of fun. So we want to share that and to make people love what we did, and love or hate, just come and see it.
Well, this is a fascinating stage that you guys are at, and with the premiere of this film. And I've talked to other filmmakers at the festival about this, because you've lived with it and nurtured it for so many years, and it's ready to be unveiled to an audience.
Yes.
And I think when that happens, it almost becomes a different film in a way, a kind of new film.
Yes.
For you. Yeah.
I mean, I always say that film is an art that you never finish, but you abandon. So I guess at this point is that we just abandon it and just let it flow. It's like a mother letting its kid go for the first time at the college. So
it doesn't belong to us.
So it's not our film anymore. I mean, it's our film. We did it, and now it's people's film. We want people to see it, to talk about it. I have open questions in the film that will make people talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Hate it or love it, they will question some choices I made and I imposed on them. I mean, it will be I want this thing to be an audience film. I want this thing to be seen by people, to be talked about by people, because now it's not our film anymore. We're just here to support it.